from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
How many roster spots in your mind do you still have open going into this?
That's a tough question. This game, you know, we say, you know, it doesn't count, but it matters. And I think there are still a few positions where it's a battle. We've been talking about competition all year, and that's still my message right now.
Good morning. Welcome in. Boston Sports Original WEEI. I am the Reverend Arcan. Nice to have you with us here today, Boston sports fans. It's the return of Sunday Mass and the Sunday service. I bet you're wondering where I've been all summer. Or maybe you're not. I don't know. I've been enjoying my summer, just like everybody else. And I am back today, and glad to be back, because it'll be a warm-up for what we're going to be bringing you on Tuesday, myself and Andy Hart, in the WEEI afternoon show, which debuts on Tuesday. Also, we have the debut of Jones and Keefe, which is tomorrow at 10 a.m. Very much looking forward to that. Doubleheader for the Red Sox tomorrow. We'll get into the Red Sox, as well as a couple other topics that I wanted to touch on. I was at the Marshfield Fair yesterday. It's fair season, folks. We'll get to that. That's a big deal for me. That's a big time in my life when the fairgrounds start opening up. I think in a past life I was like a carny or something. Anyways, before we get started here, this was a pretty wild week here at WEEI. It was the type of week that in the radio business, if you've been in it long enough, you become sort of accustomed to seeing. It's an unfortunate reality of the times we're living in right now, but this is the way things are. I mean, this is it. I've been a part of this on the negative side. It's been tough for me now, almost 15 years in this business, 10 of them here in Boston, started off in New Hampshire. It's funny when you think about, like, I don't know, I mean, this is sort of more germane to me, I guess, but when you're starting off in something and you have big aspirations for what's coming on down the road, you don't ever think of, like, days like this and weeks like this. You never think about, you know, a big week with a bunch of cuts and, you know, things like that. It's just, it's not something that ever pops into your mind when you're sort of young, getting into the business, getting into any business, really. I mean, you're thinking about being successful and building an audience and all that stuff. You know, I mean, it's not something that pops up, but it's a very, very harsh reality of what this business and most broadcasting journalism business are these days anyway. I mean, it's not just radio. Ask a newspaper reporter how secure they feel with their job. Ask, you know, a TV anchor. It's not what it used to be, that's for sure. And it's a myriad of reasons for that, none of which I have any real opinion on. It's all sort of over my head. All that to say that some good people are
still here with us, and some good people are not going to be in the same roles they were in anymore, or not working here anymore. And it's tough, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow sometimes, but we go on, we go forward, and we try and do the best that we can. So that's it. And, you know, honestly, in some ways, it's not exactly like the Patriots, but Patriots have had some people walk out the door for different reasons, obviously, over the last few years, and they're trying to figure it out themselves. So we'll start there. We'll start there with what's going on with this team. Tonight is the preseason finale for your New England Patriots. The preseason finale. Normally, when you think of preseason finales, whether it's the Patriots or any other team, you don't think about much in terms of this is a very important, very necessary, extremely eye-opening type of thing. You think that in the second game, right? Preseason week two, that's generally what it is. In preseason week two, it's very common to sort of see the starters out there. It's very common to see a little bit of the game plan getting implemented, maybe. You'll see guys running in different sets. You'll see the starters all together. That's all pretty boilerplate week two stuff. And this was before even they cut down to three. Like, week two was always the one. Now, there's only three preseason games. Preseason week one is generally sort of just considered a get some guys out there and put their cleats on and let them, you know, get used to hitting again. Preseason week two, still considered very much the dress rehearsal, still considered the big one, you know. And then preseason week three, as you saw yesterday and earlier in the week, and we'll probably see later on today, is generally just considered, all right, who is going to make the roster? Who's going to be on the bubble? Who is the last couple of guys that are going to fill out this roster? We cut down to 53. We're going to figure that out here in this game. Not going to see a lot of the starters. We know who the starters are. We know who our main guys are. This last game here, this is for the guys at the end of the bench. This is for the guys on the roster bubble. Well, I was thinking about that over the weekend, and I was thinking about what Jerod Mayo just said right there in the final preseason game, which I believe that quote was from Thursday or Wednesday. It was from earlier in the week. And what I sort of realized, and what I think the Patriots have realized, is that they're not just any old team. They're not just a regular team. They're not the Chiefs. They're not the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're watching Mac Jones go out there and tear it up in this preseason. The Jaguars know who their quarterback is. They have a nice backup now, it seems like. Seems like they have a backup who's feeling a lot more confident than he was up here. And we'll get to Mac Jones, because not only is Mac Jones killing it in the preseason, Doug Peterson, the coach of the Jaguars, talking a lot of smack. Talking some smack about your New England Patriots, which we'll get to that as well. That's a team with a regular situation. Most teams in the league have just regular situations. They know who their quarterback is. They know who the starter's going to be. Even the teams with rookie quarterbacks all know at this point. Caleb Williams is starting. Jaden Daniels is starting. Bo Nix is starting. Michael Penix, not starting, but they know that. J.J. McCarthy, obviously not starting. He's out for the year. But they know. They know what their role is. They've come to that agreement. They've seen all they need to see. The Patriots, on the other hand, I'll be perfectly honest with you, folks. We've been listening to Jerod Mayo say that Jacoby Brissett is the starter, but it's an open competition still for about a month. And I can't take it anymore. I honestly can't. It's one of those topics that it's so circular. It's so unwavering. And when I say unwavering, I mean, I guess that's not really accurate, because he does sort of waver. He does kind of go back and forth. Well, yeah, Jacoby's the starter, but it's still an open competition. May can run the huddle, but Jacoby's still our guy. He's got the experience, but we really love what May was doing out there. And you know what? If May really plays well, then maybe, just maybe, he'll be the starter in week one. We haven't decided yet. That's been the one consistent thing, is that no major decision has been made on who's going to be out there week one in Cincinnati against the Bengals. I'd say if I was a betting man, which I am, and there was book on this, I'd probably go with Brissett. But I still think there's a chance for Drake May to go out and impress tonight. And that's what I mean when I say that this is not your average, ordinary week three preseason game that almost every other team in the NFL is treating it like, including those other teams I just mentioned with rookie quarterbacks. They know what they're doing. They know where everything stands. They know who their quarterback is. They know who the first team offense is. They know who the wide receivers and the left tackle and the rest of the offensive line, the running backs and the tight ends and everything else. They have a pretty good idea of most of that. Most teams out there do. Maybe not the entire depth chart, but most of it. The primary stuff, they got an idea about that. And maybe there's some, you know, position battles. This wide receiver's been really great in the preseason. This guy's been really bad. Maybe he's dropped a little bit. Fine. But you still know who it is. And the Patriots, for the most part, on defense, I think know who they know who's out there. They know who's going to be out there. They know who their main guys are. For the defense tonight, this might be like a normal preseason game. But for the offense, there's nothing normal about this at all. For the offense, this is still, I think, part of the work that goes into a work in progress. What are you looking for tonight? Aside from the obvious one, which is Drake May playing, how much do you want to see him play? Do you want to see him start the game? He's not going to, but do you want to see him start the game? I don't. I don't want to see him start this game. Because if he starts, that signals to me that he's not going to play much. Jacoby Brissett started the last game. He played about less than a quarter, right? Or just about a quarter? I don't want to see Drake May for just one quarter. I want to see Drake May for one, two, three quarters. I want to see a lot of Drake May tonight. And if that means he doesn't start, fine. I don't care. It's like, you know, you're not getting much over there on the other side. Washington, they know what they're doing. I mean, Washington has it basically set up here at this point. They know who their quarterback is. I think they know most of their defense is. They got a new coach in there, so maybe there's some things they're going to be working on. But largely, I'd say that you're going up against the team that's got all the hay in the barn. Your hay is not in the barn. Your hay is all over the place. Your hay is all over the barnyard, all right? And they got to gather that hay up and put it in the barn at some point, and that's what you're going to see here tonight. So what are you looking for? First year without Bill Belichick, I'll say this. As we get ready to launch this 2.0 version of the Patriots here, it is pretty interesting that without Bill around, and I know that Mayo is a Belichick disciple, but without him here, you really sort of wonder, like, how tight of a ship is this going to be? It already seems like it's not. But I would point to history here when it comes to coaches and replacing coaches in New England. I mean, I know there's different examples from all over the league, but let's just keep it with New England here, okay? I was born in 1982. The coach of the Patriots in 1982 was a fellow named Ron Meyer, who fortunately passed away a few years ago, but was the coach here in New England and actually had a pretty decent tenure. All right, his first year they went 5-4, made the playoffs. Second year 8-8, and then in 1984 he started off the year I think 5-4. They fired him anyway. Sullivan fired him, brought in Raymond Berry there, and then the Rod Rust era and everything, but let's just start with that one. You had not a coach that was bottoming out. You didn't have a coach that for two decades was the standard bearer for the entire NFL. You didn't have any of that. You had a guy who was a good coach. You know, Ron Meyer was a good coach. And he ended up having a career certainly after that. After he was here in New England, he coached the Colts for 5 years. He was, I think, went to either the Canadian Football League or the Arena League or something like that, but, you know, continued coaching well into his elder years. And I think that, you know, a guy like that, move on from him, bring in some new blood, fine. Raymond Berry ended up getting to the Super Bowl this first year. That first year after Meyer got fired, and Berry was an interim coach in 84, but then his first full year as the coach, bam, right to the Super Bowl. They lost in the division round the next year, didn't make the playoffs again for the next 3 years. Boom. He's fired in 89, which brings us to the Rod Rust era, which only lasted 1 year. It was maybe the worst year in the history of the Patriots, even worse than last year, if you can believe that, as Rod Rust Patriots went 1-15. He gets fired, and they bring in Dick McPherson. 1991, Dick McPherson goes 6-10. Next year, 2-14. He's fired. And they bring in Bill Parcells. Now, this is where the story sort of gets interesting. This is where, like, the modern-day Patriots were sort of born. You may go back to McPherson. You may go back to Chuck Fairbanks. I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't know. Some old-timers are listening in the morning, I'm sure. And you remember these old days. But in the modern NFL, anyway, and I consider that, you know, mid-90s on, Parcells was sort of the guy who ushered that in here in New England. You know how Parcells did his first year? 5-11. He took a 2-14 team. Drafted Drew Bledsoe and improved by 3 wins, but still, bottom of the barrel. I mean, really, it's a lousy team. Next year, they turned that around, got up to 10-6, dropped to 6-10, 11-5 in 96, lost in the Super Bowl. Parcells flew home with the Jets, and all that's history. And that led us to Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, who had two playoff appearances, he fell off, went 8-8 in 1999, which brought us to Bill Belichick. And we all remember the first year of Bill Belichick, right? He got hit the ground running, started off great right away, right? No, he didn't, actually. Belichick's first year, they got three games worse. Went from 8-8 to 5-11. And this is the first head coach since then. So just to review, these new head coaches, when you bring in a new regime, you get mixed results. Where are you going? Are you going up or down? Hard to imagine getting worse than 4-13, but Vegas thinks so. Vegas thinks you're going to be worse. Vegas thinks that the Gerard Mayo era here in New England is going to be worse than 4-13 was last year. And it's not just so much that they lost 13 games last year. Last year was borderline unwatchable. We got Jake the Snake back there behind the glass. I mean, we all watched the same thing last year. I didn't look forward to Sundays last year. Last year, football Sundays would come on, and I would dread watching that offense. I would dread watching Mac Jones or Bailey Zappi or whoever go out there and get shut out by the Chargers or get nearly shut out by the Giants or whoever it was. At some point, it was not, as much as we all love football, it was not enjoyable watching that team.
It was kind of like a joke watching the Patriots last season. They were like only funny to laugh at and just remember the times of old, but it was tough.
It was awful. I mean, it was an awful season. They started off the year 1-5, okay, first of all. So, like, you know, you understand. They beat the Jets, and they lost every single other game. When they lost to the Raiders, you were like, okay, this is 1-5. You figure the season's over. And then they had that win against Buffalo. And you thought, oh, well, maybe there's something here. They just beat the Bills. When do they ever beat the Bills anymore? When does Mac Jones and the Patriots beat the Bills when it's not a monsoon? And then they went right back out the next week, got smoked by the Dolphins, got beat by the Commanders, had that awful game in Germany against the Colts, lost to the Giants, lost to the Chargers, and in the span of that, in the span of those three games, they scored 13 points. It was brutal last year. I feel like people forget how bad it really was. Are these Patriots going to be that bad? Are they going to be that bad? Like, that was, last year was painful. And I wonder if that's something that you can, the Patriots fans are expecting this season. If it is, I understand maybe why people aren't rushing down there to these preseason games. I had bad weather in the last one, certainly against the Eagles. But I understand maybe why that's not something you're dying to go out there and do on a Sunday. Or a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday night, like in this case. They're playing the night game tonight down there in D.C. Either way, there's a lot to look for tonight. This is a very significant preseason game, and we'll get into more of that along with the quarterback conversation and this whole situation with Mac Jones in Jacksonville and Peterson chirping the Patriots. We'll get to that later on in the hour. That thing is unbelievable. But first, here's Jacob.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
Lord,
Two more reps, two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Blasner with What's Trending.
Back here Sunday service, Reverend Arcan. Nice to have you with us here today. That was the ever-diplomatic Drake May. Speaking earlier this week about whether he wants to start or not, when we interviewed him, when I say we, Jones Mego and I, these months ago, it was a while ago, like when camp was just starting, is when we the only time we've talked to him actually. Since then, we've talked to Brissett, so maybe that tells you something. But I asked him, I said, Drake, do you want to start? He said, yeah, yeah, I want to start. Of course, I want to start. But that was more, do you want to start? Not like, have you talk to other quarterbacks about guys who play right away. I mean, that was a more detailed answer. I got right to the heart of the matter. I cut right through the nonsense, as I am wont to do. And he said, yeah, of course. You know, same stuff. Diplomatic, right? Yeah, well, we'll go with what the coaches say. It matters what the coaches say, of course. But yeah, who doesn't want to start? I'm in the NFL. Of course I want to start. Why wouldn't you want to start? As for the question of playing rookie quarterbacks, is it worth it? Is it worth throwing your rookie out there? Is that something that will make or break your franchise? I've done the research on this, and if you heard the show, if you heard the last couple episodes of Jones, Mego, and Arcan this week, then you heard some of the research I did. If you missed it, I'll revisit it here, because I went back 10 years, all the way back to 2014, and I went through every single rookie quarterback, not in the first round for the most part, not all of them, but most of them. And the data is interesting. We'll start in 2014. Jacksonville Jaguars' Blake Bortles was drafted third overall. Remember Blake Bortles? That team, that Jaguars team, was very bad. They went from 4-12 to 3-13, and then a couple years later, they're in the AFC Championship game challenging the Patriots. Almost took them out of that game. Patriots almost didn't make it to lose to Nick Foles. They almost got knocked out right then by the Jags. But Danny Amendola had that great catch. The rest is history. But it was a rough start. They got worse. The Jaguars with Bortles went from 4-12 to 3-13 their first year. 2015, two quarterbacks drafted in the top three. Jameis Winston, first overall by the Bucs. Marcus Mariota, second overall by the Titans. Winston's Bucs went from 2-14 to 6-10 his rookie year. Mariota's Titans went from 2-14 to 3-13. Both of those guys flamed out. But both of their teams got better. 2016, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, 1-2 overall. Jared Goff's Rams went from 7-9 down to 4-12. They got worse. Carson Wentz, those Eagles went from 7-9 to 9-7. They got better. And then the next year, they won the Super Bowl. 2017, by the way, the Rams with Jared Goff 2 years later were in the Super Bowl. They lost, but they made it there, all right? They got worse, but then they rebounded. Goff had a bad rookie year, and then all of a sudden he was leading his team to the Super Bowl with that Sean McVay offense. And then they kicked his ass to the curb and brought in Matthew Stafford, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here. 2017, Mitch Trubisky, the Bears. Third overall pick, team got two games better, went from 3-13 to 5-11. Trubisky's now a backup. That same year, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson were drafted. They didn't play much in their rookie years, so I'm leaving them out. I'm talking about quarterbacks that played their rookie years, played a significant amount of time, and made an impact on their team. 2018, Browns, Baker Mayfield, first overall. That was an 0-16 team that drafted Baker Mayfield. Next year, they went 7-8-1, so that's a big turnaround, a seven-game turnaround there. Mayfield now is still in the league. A little touch and go there for a while. It seemed like maybe he was on his way out, but he resurrected his career and he's still kicking around. 2018 also had Sam Darnold with the Jets. He's picked third overall. They went from 5-11 to 4-12. Josh Allen, seventh overall. That Buffalo Bills team got worse, went from 9-7 to 6-10. Darnold is now, where's Darnold? Minnesota?
He just won that starter job by default since McCarthy got hurt. Josh Allen is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. 2019, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. That team got better. Drafted him first overall. It was a 3-13 team. Next year, 5-10-1. Murray's still, you know, still in the league. Still kind of not sure what to make of him. He got hurt a lot, but, you know, he's still out there. He's still playing. Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes, sixth overall in 2019. That team got worse, 5-11-4-12. Daboll came in, they make the playoffs, and now they're back to sort of uncertainty. But, you know, that's the story of them. Joe Burrow and the Bengals went from 2-14 to 4-11. It was a two-game improvement from a bottom-of-the-barrel team. Burrow now considered one of the elite quarterbacks in the league when he's healthy. Tua got benched, so I'm going to leave him out. Justin Herbert, drafted sixth overall, got rushed into playing because they stabbed Tyrod Taylor in the lungs. That team got five games better. They went from five, or no, they got two games better, from 5-11 to 7-9. Trevor Lawrence and the Jags, 1-15 to 3-14. They got better. Zach Wilson, that Jets team got better. They were 2-14 up to 4-13. Mac Jones and the Patriots, 7-9 up to 10-7. And C.J. Stroud, of course, last year, a 3-13 team, jumped up to 10-7, a seven-game swing, which is the biggest since Baker Mayfield. Add up all of these quarterbacks, and I skipped a couple of there, but add them all up. The average change for a team drafting a rookie quarterback and playing him is one win. Is that a lot? No. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to put the guy out there? Is it worth it to put the guy out there if it just means one more win from last year? If Drake May goes out there and plays all season and the Patriots go from 4-13 to 5-12, will you consider that worth it? I know there's a lot of other mitigating factors here, but that's really what it all comes down to, right? There were some negative ones. Bryce Young and the Panthers last year, that was a team that was 7-10 when they drafted him. They dropped to 2-15 last year. They got substantially worse. They were back picking in the lottery again. But some of the other ones, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, rookie years, their teams got worse, and those two guys are still in the league and they're still playing at a high level. I think overall the data tells us that there usually isn't a big turnaround either way. If you're picking high, if you're picking a quarterback in the top 10, it's because you suck, all right? And odds are you're going to continue to suck with your rookie quarterback. And for a lot of guys on this list, they got off to slow starts and then became elite quarterbacks. I think that's your best case scenario for Drake May, right? I don't really care what happens this year. I mean, I think we all sort of want to have an entertaining season. We all want to be entertained on Sundays, unlike last year where it was painful to sit through those games. Sitting down to watch a Patriots game last year was like going to the dentist. It was really, I mean, it was really uncomfortable. Can we get a season that's not unpleasant? Can we get a season where even if the team's not great, at the very least, you're sort of watching going, okay, there's something here. This is better than I expected. This team's stringing some drives together. They're going back and forth. A couple of exciting games. And not exciting like that Chargers game last year that they lost 6-0. That was not exciting. It was close, but it was not exciting. An offensive slugfest. When's the last time we've seen one of those? That's what I'd like to see. And really, I don't think that's asking too much. By the way, the New England Ford Clubhouse is brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Make it the best summer ever with Ford by joining the Bronco family or getting the made-for-you New England Edition F-150 official truck of the Red Sox. We'll get to the Red Sox here in just a moment. But largely, I think what this data tells me is that there's really no downside to playing your rookie quarterback. There's none. Do you think if Patrick Mahomes played for the Chiefs his rookie year, that would have been some big detriment? Deshaun Watson, he got hurt, but I mean, he was playing well for the Texans before that happened and before he turned into a total creep. Tua Tagovailoa got off to a pretty good start, ended up getting benched for Fitzpatrick, and that team won 10 games that year. The only one you can really sort of point to is Trey Lance. Trey Lance, who was drafted in that 2021 draft with all those other quarterbacks, they traded all those picks to go get him, San Francisco did. And he can't get on the field, and now he's a backup in Dallas, and he stinks there, too.
He threw five interceptions last night.
Five interceptions in one preseason game.
And I think he fumbled twice as well.
Did he really? I didn't know he fumbled twice.
Numbers, yeah.
Wow. Wow, Trey Lance. You know, like, I just gave you a long list of quarterbacks, most of whom are still in the league. No, all of whom are still in the league, except is Winston on a team? Winston's somewhere, right?
Yeah.
He's a backup somewhere.
I think he's on the Browns.
Okay, and Mariota's a backup somewhere too, right? He's still kicking around somewhere, I think. Bortles is out of the league. He's gone. But like everybody else on that list that I just gave you was drafted over the last 10 years, still in the league. Trey Lance is going to be out of there. I mean, Trey Lance, that guy could not beat out anybody in San Francisco, from Jimmy Garoppolo to Brock Purdy to anybody. I mean, he could not get on the field. And now he's in Dallas. And I mean, listen, it's a tough ass to go out there and beat out Dak Prescott. Not that I think Prescott's amazing or anything, but he's, you know, better than Jimmy Garoppolo. And he's out there in the preseason. He had five interceptions and two fumbles. That is an unserious backup quarterback. So other than Trey Lance, almost every single one of these guys, at the very least, has seen a modicum of some success. You know, other than like Kenny Pickett or Bryce Young, who's only in his second year. Maybe you can include Justin Fields there. Although I think Justin Fields had a couple, you know, like with Chicago, he seemed like he was developing a little bit. Now he's a backup, or I don't know. Is Pittsburgh still a quarterback controversy? I feel like Wilson has the job, but they're not. Tomlin's not announcing it, so maybe that's one that's still up in the air. Either way, these are all guys who are still in the league. Some of them are better than others, obviously. Some of them have had better careers. But getting play in their rookie year, playing in their rookie year, didn't ruin them, didn't completely decimate them. It didn't put this big hindrance on their career going forward. Like, oh my God, if only I had sat behind whoever, you know, like if only Mac Jones had sat behind Cam Newton for another year, oh, it'd have been, things have been so much better. Mac Jones had a good rookie year. You didn't ruin him by playing him his rookie year. That's not what happened with Mac Jones. And we'll get to Mac Jones here in just a minute, because this Jacksonville thing is just too much. That's not what happened. Josh Allen, you know, I mean, they had Nathan Peterman on that team, and he couldn't do anything. So they said, all right, we got to play Allen. Let's put him out there. Let's see what he's got. And he didn't have a great rookie year. We all remember Josh Allen looked kind of over his head there in that rookie year, and it didn't ruin him. He got better. He improved. You hope for that with Drake May. You hope for it. But at the very least, to all the people saying, oh, if you put him out there, it's going to ruin him. Oh, if you start him week one, there is no chance he's going to be successful. Based on what? I just gave you almost every single quarterback I drafted in the last 10 years, and you can't really say that about any of them. Any of them. You know, would Sam Darnold have been better if he sat behind whoever? Like, I don't think so. I don't agree with that. I definitely don't think it would have made a difference for Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert. Or really any of these other guys, Trubisky, Goff, Mariota, like none of them I don't think would have benefited much from sitting behind the quarterback there. And even if they would have, it's not like it sunk them. It's not like they were ruined. It's not like they were out of the league and, you know, selling insurance or something. This is what it's like now. This is how it is. And you may look at Mac Jones and think of that as a cautionary tale. That's not accurate. Playing Mac Jones' rookie year was the right move. The wrong move was bringing in a defensive coordinator to be his offensive coordinator the next year and then completely shirking your responsibilities of surrounding him with weapons to try and make him better after a promising rookie year. It wasn't a great year.
Have you, like, played football?
I have not. Not since the freshman team. And I'll tell you what. I was the best third-string gunner on that freshman team by far. I made one tackle that year on a kickoff. And it wasn't even really a tackle. Like, I slowed the guy down. Some other kid came over and tackled him. But I got credit for, like, a half tackle. My only stat of the entire season as the third-string gunner. I was hoping I'd get into a game because I was a tight end, I guess. I mean, that was my that's where I lined up on the return team. And I was always hoping I get to go out there and block or run a route or something like that. The coach was just like, nope. No, we're going to stick you on kickoffs. That's where we think your talents are best suited. And only when these other two guys are hurt or when they played too much in the previous series, we'll have you go out there and run down the field. And I made one tackle. So no, Mac, I haven't played much football. But I can tell you this, playing Mac Jones' rookie year is not what ruined him. We all know that. Anybody who says that's being disingenuous, you know that's not the problem. That was not the problem with Mac. If they had continued doing what they did his rookie year, and what I mean by that is in the offseason of his rookie year, that was the last time the Patriots spent on anyone. That was the last time the Patriots really went out there and said, you know what, we're going to improve this team, we're going to make this roster better. We're not just going to re-sign all our own guys and keep all these familiar faces around because we're a bunch of new coaches and we're all scared of the unknown. No. Bill Belichick, with the blessing of Robert Kraft, went on a massive spending spree. And I didn't love all the guys they spent on. I mean, come on, Nelson Aguilar, you know, Jonnu Smith. There were plenty of busts there, obviously. But there was also Matthew Judon, who, you know, maybe not the great perfect time to bring that up. But he was good for you while he was here. Kendrick Bourne's been a good player for you while he was here. Hunter Henry's been a good player for you while he was here. Those were all high-end free agents that offseason. And Bill signed them all. I mean, the Patriots had a ton of money. It seemed like no one else did. And the Patriots went out and signed all those guys. They signed both tight ends. The two top free agent tight ends, they signed them both. Along with two wide receivers and several guys on the defense. And then they decided we're never going to spend again. That was the last time. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you loved your Nelson Aguilar season. Sorry, Mac Jones. We're not going to do anything else. You're welcome, by the way, for all these great players we brought to you. But that's it. It's never, never, ever happening again. And, you know, good luck, everybody. By the way, season ticket prices have gone up again this year. Like, that's pretty much what happened there. And if the Patriots were willing to do that back then, you wonder why they're not doing it this year. They knew they were going to be drafting a quarterback. They knew they were going to have a ton of cap space. And instead of going out and doing what the only thing that ever worked for Mac Jones, surrounding him with actual talent, investing in his future, investing in his weapons, instead of doing that for Drake May, what'd they do? Nothing. Calvin Ridley gone. Couldn't swing a trade for Brandon Ayuk. He doesn't want to come here. You know, you didn't draft a wide receiver until the second round, and it was, you know, the second best guy on that Washington Huskies team. And maybe Polk's going to have a great season. I don't know. Maybe he will. But there were other guys you could have had. There were other moves you could have made. There were elite talents out there. And even if not elite, you know, maybe you don't think T. Higgins or Calvin Ridley, one of those guys, is elite. But they're better than what you got. And I thought, at the very least, and this is on the Krafts. This isn't on Bill. Bill's not here anymore. At the very least, I thought the Krafts would revisit what happened in 2021, their last successful season, and say, what did we do that offseason that really worked? Why did that work for us? What was the formula there? It was a simple formula. You drafted a quarterback, and you surrounded him with talent. You surrounded him with not the most high-end talent, but it was the high-end talent of that particular offseason, that particular free agent class. You went out there and said, we're spending. We got money to spend, and we're spending it. This year, you had money to spend, too. And you still do, by the way. You still have, I think, the second most cap space of any team in the league, which is pathetic. And instead of doing that, what'd you do? You just re-signed all your own guys, mostly on defense. Some on offense, but mostly on defense. So that Jerod Mayo would feel a little bit more comfortable with his roster. So he wouldn't have to play the name game with a bunch of new players or whatever the hell they were doing down there. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like that was a formula that worked for you. It's the last formula that has worked for you. And they abandoned it this offseason. That's the one hesitation I have about playing Drake May. Did you surround them with enough talent? Are you throwing them to the wolves? I feel like a lot of people think you are. They think that they are doing that. You can't play Drake May. That's throwing him to the wolves. He doesn't have a left tackle. He doesn't have anybody to throw to. You know, and it's kind of true. I mean, listen, we don't know who the left tackle is. I have no idea. I don't even know who the right tackle is. Onwenu, is it going to be him? I don't know. We'll see tonight, probably. I have a better idea of it. But even if he's the right tackle, I don't know who's on the left. And by the way, Drake May is right-handed, so that's his blind side. Okay? He'll be able to see the guy coming off the right end. He doesn't know who's coming behind him. All he knows is that the guy who's over there supposed to be blocking was not the first choice. That's all he's going to know for sure when he's out there. And that's not a great thing to have your rookie quarterback thinking in the back of his mind. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's open up the phone lines here early and often on the Sunday service. We begin down in North Attleboro with Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
Hey, they always say that the quarterbacks, when they leave college, they have a tough time under center. It's like, why don't they put them on the center in college? Like, it seems like 80% or maybe more they're in the shotgun, and I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, thanks, Paul. I think it has something to do with the programs that you're in. I mean, you know, there's more pro-style offenses and different conferences, different coaches. Coaches who have sort of a pipeline to the NFL. I think, Saban for years, he was always trying to get guys ready for the NFL. You look at where a lot of these quarterbacks have been coming from lately. I mean, the Bama's put a few through already. Mac Jones, Bryce Young, Tua, Jalen Hurts, you know, like there's been a lot of Alabama quarterbacks who have come through recently. Trying to think of some of the other, Clemson, you know, Clemson had Lawrence and
Oklahoma.
Watson. Oklahoma's another one, sure. I mean, I think that, you know, when you're talking about the difference between under center and the shotgun, that's sort of, you know, if we're getting real in the weeds here in terms of these details, that's fine. But I think that generally it depends where they're coming from. You know, you get guys out of 1AA or, you know, some of these smaller schools, sometimes these quarterbacks emerge. Josh Allen came out of Wyoming, you know. Like, I just sort of think they tailor it to whatever works for their offense and their situation in the conference that they're in. And if the player can pick it up, fine. But, I mean, again, I just gave you a bunch of examples of guys who all were able to make that transition. Maybe not perfectly, but they figured it out. And I think that they do get a better sense for that. You know, I'm a Colorado Buffaloes fan. That team's in the shotgun all day. You know, like, that's what it is. Shedeur Sanders, he's in the shotgun. He's going to know that type of offense when he comes into the NFL this year, this next year.
Speaking of teams with no offensive line.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They spent a lot of money, I should say. They spent a lot of recruiting time on getting some new wide receivers in there. They know what sells tickets. Prime knows what sells tickets.
They need the QR codes on the back of everybody's helmet.
Did you see what he did to that reporter? Do you know about this?
Yeah, he was like, oh, I don't trust, what was it, CBS or something?
No, it was a Denver Post reporter. So there's a story coming out of Denver now that Deion Sanders has barred this Denver Post columnist from asking questions at press conferences or even being at press conferences, I think. They've barred him from that because CU was so desperate to sign Sanders that they wrote a provision in his contract that says he can pick and choose which reporters come to the scrums and ask questions at the press conferences and stuff like that. Which, by the way, Jesus Christ, Colorado. Come on. You're putting that in the guy's contract? Really? And second of all, Sanders, you're actually using that, you're exercising that clause in the guy. You know how soft that makes you look?
This guy was mean to me. You can't come to our scrums.
I hope that guy rips them every day. And I love the Buffaloes. All right? I am a CU alumnus. I hope that guy gets on his typewriter for the Post and rips Sanders and rips the Buffaloes every single day. Because that is softer than freshly fallen snow. Barring a reporter because he was mean to you. Oh, is he mean to you, Coach Prime? You won 4 games last year. How many flowers do we have to throw at your feet here? And I am a Buffaloes fan through and through, despite what Jones and everybody else might say, just because I'm critical of my team. Oh, I can't be critical of my team that I'm a fan of? Yeah, that's a new rule I don't like. You went from 1 win to 4 wins, which is an improvement. But let's not start asking like you're competing in bowl season here. All right, it's a lot to prove for those Buffaloes this year. They should not be barring any reporters. Any team did that in this town, I would rip them up and down. And since it hasn't, then I have to spend this time on Deion Sanders. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, Mac Jones has been killing it in the preseason, and Doug Peterson has something to say about it. We'll get to that next. Jesus. Doug Peterson, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, former coach of the Eagles. Beat you in the Super Bowl 7 years ago with Nick Foles. And I don't know, man. Can you play that? Can you play that money quote again, if you don't mind, Jacob? Because that was that cut me deep hearing that. Hearing Doug Peterson say we have to remind him.
Yeah, he'll still revert back to his Patriot ways every now and then, and we got to remind him he's in Jacksonville. But
okay, stop. He'll revert back to his Patriot ways sometimes. And that's not in a positive way, not like the Patriot way that we all sort of grew up with. No. He reverts back to the Patriot ways. He goes back to sucking. He goes back to the way he played when he was with the Patriots and the bad stuff that used to happen there. And we have to remind him. This is the best part. That is not how we do things here in Jacksonville, sir. This is the Patriot way. Is that we do not accept that. That is not an acceptable way of doing your job here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars, the mighty Jaguars. Ugh. There's been a bunch of like bellwether moments, I think, over the last 5 years since Brady left where you really kind of were like, okay. This thing's really over. This thing's really, they are not the Patriots anymore. Losing Brady, obviously a big one of them. Losing Bill Belichick, another huge thing. When they traded Mac Jones, I thought, okay, well, that was the guy that Bill handpicked. And now, Mac Jones is in Jacksonville, tearing it up. First game against Atlanta, 13 of 18, 113 yards and a touchdown. Second game against Tampa, 16 of 23, 210 yards and two touchdowns. Against the Chiefs.
Yes. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Mac. 9 of 11, 98 yards. Mac Jones is the highest rated passer in the NFL this preseason. He's the best quarterback in the league in the preseason, which I know it's the preseason, but still. Doesn't that piss you off? Doesn't that upset you, Patriots fans? You might have wanted Mac gone. I probably did. But, like, the fact that there's still a decent quarterback in there somewhere, and I don't know what the Jaguars are going to do with him. They probably don't want to keep him as a backup now. Like, you probably get more value trading him somewhere. I bet the Vikings would be looking at him like, all right, is this guy better than Sam Darnold? Sure looks like it so far. Let's bring him in here. There's other teams that could probably, use a look.
I don't know what that is.
It's called the Yips, Mac. Look it up. I doubt he's coming back here. The Colts, their backup right now is Joe Flacco, and Anthony Richardson got hurt last year. That could be a team that says, you know what? We may need a strong backup here. The Raiders. It's a bunch of teams. Hell, even the Panthers. Bryce Young may just not be good. Panthers backup right now is Andy Dalton. Who'd you rather have, Andy Dalton or Mac Jones? The way Mac Jones is playing in the preseason, I'll take him.
Nobody will get their hands on my journal.
Okay. Anyway, Mac making a lot of people look stupid. And we'll see if he actually gets into any games this year. I'm kind of doubting it. Trevor Lawrence, I think, has that job pretty well locked up. But he's making a push, and he is certainly increasing his value. And that's not a sentence I was expecting to have to say at any point this season about Mac Jones. 617-779-7937. That Peterson comment, oh, man. Peterson's sneaky becoming the next Coughlin, Like this one guy who just kind of randomly owns the Patriots. He's not great or anything, but when he's playing you, when he's playing New England, he's very confident. He knows he's going to win. He knows he can bring in the old quarterback who flamed out here. I can make something out of this guy. No problem. 2017 Patriots are the best team in the West. Okay, they want a three-peat? No, I'm just gonna beat them in the Super Bowl. I'm gonna score all these points against their defense. No problem with Nick Foles. No problem. Something about these coaches. Every once in a while, there's just a coach like that. Shanahan was like that. Mike Shanahan, I'm talking about with the Broncos. He always had the Patriots number. Coughlin always did. Peterson now. You can add him to that list. 617-779-7937. Matt is in Rhode Island. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what's up, RK? I'm looking forward to your new show.
Thank you.
But that Doug Peterson thing was awesome. But, hey, right after they beat the Patriots, YouTube, they're like doing the parade or something, and someone like hummed a beer at Doug Peterson. He like stabbed it out of the air and like cracked it open and drank it.
At the Eagles parade?
Yeah.
Wow, I'll look that up. I have not seen that. They were throwing it at him like they weren't. It wasn't like throwing it to him. They were throwing it at him. he stabbed it out of the air.
He came in with some velocity. They were throwing it to him, but he just stabbed it right out of the air. It was phenomenal.
That's pretty good.
And that quote was just was gold right there. But anyway, as it pertains to the Patriots, like I have to say this, like the NFL is a league full of parity, right? So we're down at the bottom, no doubt, with our roster and our coaches. This year, I just like to see them. Get on solid ground, like not all the dumb penalties, which I think they're going to do anyway, and then just gear it for next year and try to build up. If Drake May's the guy, I think he'd be back in contention next year for, like, on a lower level of making the playoffs. But with the parity, that's just my take. Thanks.
All right, thanks for the call, Matt, and I agree with you. I think the parity is an important thing in the NFL this year. I just think that, as important as it is, you're rebuilding. The other three teams in your division are not, certainly not. The Jets are not rebuilding. The Jets just brought in an old quarterback. You don't do that when you're rebuilding. The Bills are not rebuilding. The Dolphins are not rebuilding. Like, you're a rebuilding team with three teams kind of in their primes right now all ahead of you. And that's a daunting task going forward. He just said something else that I wanted to comment on, but now I can't remember. Oh, Drake May. I sort of look at this as like the Justin Herbert paradox, right? Justin Herbert with the Chargers, that team was not a good team. But you could tell watching Herbert that he was going to be good. And I think that the bar now is so low. First of all, the bar here in New England is so low, a baby can crawl over it, like no question there. But it's low enough that if Drake May, and I think he'll get a lot of leash. I think that Drake May is going to get a lot of leash. The mistakes that he makes, people are going to be understanding about when he throws interceptions, unless it becomes like a really big problem. You know, unless it becomes like a Nathan Peterman thing or Mac Jones last year or something like that. If he goes out there and he shows you something, that's going to be enough to hold fans over, but you got to put him out there. You got to put him out there, Robert, Jonathan, Robin, Gerard, Alex Van Pelt, all you guys. You got to put him out there. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. When we come back, the Red Sox in the middle of a free fall as the Arizona Diamondbacks have come to town and been very rude guests here at Fenway Park the last couple of days. We'll get to all things Red Sox right after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.